Hey, hey, when you hear that music, you know that this is a special edition of Spiritual Perspectives. That's right, Spiritual Perspectives, taking a look at real life from, well, a spiritual perspective. I'm Scout Bartlett. I'll be your host. I'll remind you that you can find additional episodes archived in the radio archives on ifidknownthen.com. I'm tremendously excited to get to talk with our guest this morning, and so I want to get there as fast as I can. Here's an interesting twist. During a period of time earlier, she worked as a market research consultant for computer manufacturing companies, and at the same time taught Japanese language and literature at community colleges and universities and taught dance to children. Busy. She's shifted gears now, and her statement now is she is a student, practitioner, and teacher of a particular healing science through the Christian Science practices. She studies the relationship between prayer and healing, consciousness and reality, spirituality and well-being. Her job is to find out how we can free ourselves from various limitations. So everybody, this is Fujiko Signs. Fujiko, this is everybody.
Hi, everybody. This is Fujiko. Good to hear from you, Scout.
This is such a treat. We're actually we're talking across the world today because Fujiko is with us from Japan this morning.
Yes.
Love to have you here.
Thank you.
And so, Fujiko, when I was reading in some notes, in some of your notes, there's a note that says that in your mid-30s, you fell ill. That's better. You fell ill, and you sought healing through various different remedies, but none of them gave you a lasting cure. And then one day, to your surprise, you found out that healing, just as it is in the Christian Bible, as done by Christ Jesus, was still possible, still real, and still learnable now. Can we talk about that particular practice and that particular experience that sounds like it was probably life-changing?
Oh, yes, yes. In my 30s, I was a mother of two young children in elementary school and a wife of a graduate student, but we used to say gradual student because he was going into his 12th year, I think he was on graduate school, and I was working probably five different part-time jobs to try to make ends meet, and I started to have a very almost violent physical problems, short of breath, fainting, and not being able to, stand, be vertical, and so I was really alarmed by the situation, and I come from Japan, and starting from my mother, who really taught not the Western medicine, but the traditional medicine way of healing, whether it's through Chinese diet or medicine of some herbal medicine, or simply by using tea. You're probably familiar with if you. I say Reiki. So those are the things that I would normally first seek healing from. But at the time I was living in the middle of Pennsylvania, I couldn't really find anyone who, would practice these things that I was familiar with. So I eventually went to the doctor who ran through me through some extensive tests, and including putting some kind of, you probably know how what it's called, but some kind of small camera into my, even to see my heart from inside.
Wow.
they can actually see how the bulbs were working and things like that. So, and I was diagnosed, I don't know the English name, but definitely not to have a, sports. Don't play sports, don't have any more children. It was not really closing tightly, and I, just had all these predicaments that I won't be active as I wanted to be in my 30s and further, into my middle middle age and so forth.
Yeah, but now that you're in your late 30s, very late 30s.
Mid 30s, I guess. But
well,
anyway,
then. I'm sorry, I was just joking about you wanted to be active now that you're in your very late 30s.
Yes, thank you very much. Eternal 30s. But anyway, 30. Around that time, it's interesting because my older daughter was asking me to find her Sunday school. And I thought, no, Sunday school is the last thing I'm going to find her. Because I went to Christian school and I love the school, I love the nuns, and I love all the, you know, loving atmosphere. But one thing it really bothered me was that we were told that we were born sinners. And I felt intuitively as I became a mother, I didn't want to teach that doctrine to my children. I didn't want them to grow up thinking they were somehow stained, you know, from the very beginning, because I didn't believe in it. So anyway, when she asked me to find her Sunday school, I just, I said yes, but I didn't look for it. And you know how children are very, very persistent. And every Saturday she will come to me and say, did you find me a Sunday school? Tomorrow is Sunday, Mom. And so after, I don't know, a month and a half or almost 2 months, I confessed to her that I was not looking for one. I didn't say why, because I didn't want to bring up that subject. But she just kept looking at me, and so she said, then what are we going to do? So I said, well, Mia is her name. Mia, there's only one kind of prayer that I know that I can say from my heart, and that is to say thank you to God. So I decided that every night, the two of my daughters, we will say thank you to God, and we made a song. We say thank you to Him for all different things. And also pray for something or someone, depending on what are, you know, going around at their school or maybe in the news. We continued to do this for about 2 or 3 months. And then one day, one of my part-time job was to teach children dance, and my dance teacher's daughter came from New York. She was a music theater actress. And came from New York to Pennsylvania to see her mother. And I overheard her speak in the dance studio that this daughter was going to sing in this mother's church as a soloist. And I heard that this daughter went to Europe and took Little Shop of Horrors, a Broadway show, to Germany. And her role was she played Audrey. It is really the main character, right? Or I guess maybe not main, but one of the main.
Yeah,
two
just
main
wow.
Characters. So I just felt as a wife of graduate student who cannot afford to go to New York to go to, you know, not to mention buying a ticket to the theater, I thought, wow, she's going to sing in the church and it's going to be free. I don't have to pay to go. Listen to her. So I approached her and said, Heidi, can I come listen to you when you sing in your mother's church? And she said, of course you can. And so I went there just to go listen to her. And, you know, it was quite different because there wasn't any minister or priest, but two lay people came out and read from the Holy Bible and Science and Health with Teach the Scriptures, written by Mary Baker Eddy, which is a textbook for any students of Christian Science or anyone who's interested in health, interested in the way of healing that Christ Jesus had showed us how to do and encouraged us to do. But anyway, I didn't know all these things. I was sitting there thinking, this is a very unusual church. And not many, you know, they stood up 3 times to sing hymns, which I love because I went to, you know, Christian school and I love singing these hymns. Some of them, the tunes were familiar with, but I sat through and realized that there was not a single ceremony or ritual in the Sunday service. And another thing I noticed was that it's quiet. You know, it's very contemplative. They're listening and seem to be really, I just felt like this might be a new version of Christianity. Like, finally, they're getting it to this point that there's a Zen-like Christianity. So, anyway, and I was hearing a lot of not anything about condemnation but more about love and truth. And so at the end of the service, it dawned on me that perhaps this church may be, you know, different enough for my daughter Mia to come to the Sunday school. So I asked them whether they had one. They said yes, and I said, may I talk to the superintendent or one of the teachers? So they introduced me to the superintendent, and I asked her very directly, what you teach here, and do you teach original sin? I have two daughters, and one of them really wants to come to the church, the Sunday school. And she explained to me that in this Sunday school, they really emphasize the very first chapter of Genesis, where we learn that man, female, you know, all children, adults, and everyone else involved, are made in the image and likeness of God, image and likeness of spirit. And so we're spiritual more than we're material. So I said, well, I didn't really know that version of the beginning of man or creation, but what about Adam and Eve? And she said, Adam and Eve is an allegory that you can really start from the standpoint of material or materialistic way of thinking, that you're made from the clay, for example, the dust, or a woman made out of Adam's rib. You know, we really come to this wall. It's very limited view of man. And she even said that we teach children how to pray so that they can defend themselves from this limited way of view that imposed upon us daily. So I said, oh, my goodness, okay, I'll bring my two daughters. So that's how I started to go, just because my daughter requested me to find her a Sunday school. The Sunday school is only 1 hour, and I was not supposed to be, you know, sitting with them, watching over their shoulders. So I thought, okay, I might as well just wait in the sanctuary and listen to these people read these two books. I didn't have any textbook or didn't imbibe the Bible. I was just sitting there. And after maybe a month or two, my husband noticed that I have not had this whole short of breath or fainting. He said that I have noticed that you've been very healthy. And it dawned on me, like, well, that's true. It's very interesting because around that time, another job that I had was a paraprofessional for the school district. And every year we had to have physical to start the new semester, I guess. So I went to a doctor, and he was listening to my heart, you know, as they usually do. And the doctor says, Fujiko, you have a perfect heart. And I said, no, doctor, I don't have a perfect heart. You know, I've been diagnosed. And he was an elderly gentleman, and I thought his hearing was bad. So I asked him to please listen to it, to my heart one more time. Did you call it testicle? Well, anyway, so he was smiling and said, okay, I will. He just listened to my heartbeat and said, Fujiko, you have a perfect heart. And that really was it. I was led. I was almost telling him I had a bad heart, and I continued to believe that, even though my husband said I was not fainting recently. So that was the first time it dawned on me that perhaps what they're saying from the, you know, from when they're reading every week, this something we call Bible lesson, every week they change the subject, but basically there's learning about this whole, going back to the very first chapter of Genesis. You are not made in you know, having a beginning as a material, kind of a clay, and then to be ending somewhere in after we call, you know, death, there's no life. So I started to attend that Sunday service and the Wednesday testimony meetings where people stand up and share how they use the ideas in these two books, or when they read the periodicals, the articles or healing accounts, how they apply to themselves. And, you know, I attended sometimes with my children, and it became a place for me to also rest, because, you know, what church does is to make you sit for 1 hour, or at least not be standing washing dishes or cleaning up or, you know, doing some work. And so that became like my oasis. And I tell people that Wednesday testimony meeting was my Sunday school. I actually end up studying Christian Science. And even when I say to my older daughter, thanks to you, I regain my health, and I love what I'm doing right now. And this young lady, my daughter, does not even remember that she said she wanted to go to Sunday school. She said, I don't think I said that. And I said, yes, you did. And, you know, it's very interesting, because even though she was not, you know, like an adult reasoning to think that I needed this, I think she was led like a little angel, that she asked me to find her a Sunday school. And so, you know, to me, it really emphasized, you know, whatever the, we may say that religion is based on doctrine, but with, through Christian Science study, I came to see that this religion is based on inspiration. And that's really practical. And it, you know, even though she doesn't remember, I remember. And I know what the, that effect had in my life. And I'm sure to some degree to her too, because she went to the Sunday school and learned about how we're not limited, that there's no wall between races, gender. She's in Laos right now, Vientiane, working for WWF. Before that, she was working for another NPO, non-profit organization, to deal with the water issues with the Mekong, with five different countries. So, you know, I just feel like there was a ripple effect. Yes, it started with realizing my heart was regained health. I had a new heart, but it was very practical. So I think it really makes, you know, it leads me to really think about, is Christian Science practical? I can't imagine anything more practical than the study of Christian Science.
So there you are with your perfect heart, and obviously your daughter working in Laos is no longer in grade school. But there was one piece that I really, yes, but still in your 30s.
That's right.
There was one piece, Fujiko, that really caught my attention, because I know myself, when I've been focused on healing, my tendency has been looking to realign my own energy, my own body, my own whatever. But I see a lot of practices that their focus is make my heart better, make my heart better, make my heart better. So it's almost like the focus is on the place where the issue was. And yet...
Right.
You're saying that was not how your heart changed to be the perfect heart. You weren't going into those services and thinking, my heart has a problem, please fix it. My heart has a problem, please fix it. Can you talk about that part a little bit?
Well, you know, I just feel like there's another important part about Christian Science, and we are all still learning. I'm still trying to understand more and how to explain this, you know, in a way that it makes sense to other people. But I think what really is important in Christian Science is that a prayer is not, first of all, positive thinking or mental manipulation or placebo. But it's completely knowing that health depends on divine mind. This is not just our brain encased within our skull. But when I say mind with capital M, divine mind, is actually consciousness. So you may call God or spirit, or what holds the power that holds the universe in its form. And it's not material. And so I didn't know all these things, but when I walked into When I walked into that room, okay, people who were sitting there are not just coming to visit. They have been studying whatever the subject that they were studying that week, whether it's love, God as love, or God as spirit, or God as life. They come with this understanding and bringing that mental aspect. And so it's not one person, is manipulating another person's mind to try to heal another body. But as you can tell, when the room is full of love, if someone loves you, don't you feel it?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as opposed to like if someone hates me, if I walk into that room, I can feel it.
Yep.
And so there was one thing about if we are to align anything, if we are aligning ourselves with that divine mind, the others can also feel the effects of it. And I think that's how Jesus was. When he walked into a room or when he passed by, those who are receptive or those people who felt like a child knowing, you know, there's some openness, not a closed-mindedness, openness, probably felt like, wow, it used to be dark here, but suddenly it's a little bit lighter, brighter. In many cases, I have a Japanese gentleman who was in mid-70s, was healed of long-time hepatitis C. He had it for nearly 45 years. He was healed simply by reading Science and Health, the textbook. And why did that happen? Because the whole mental atmosphere had changed. Something clicked to remind him what he always knew, that he's not really a material body with a problem inside. He's actually free. He's made an image and likeness. At that time, he was Buddhist. He used to tell me that, but I am Buddhist, but I was healed. But anyway, what happened was, when this gentleman was walking the dog, and this is right in the middle of reading this textbook, probably almost halfway, suddenly one direction that he was facing, which was east, he remembers the direction he was facing, became bright, light, lit up. And he said to me later, it should be the western side should be brighter if I'm walking in the evening, because it was a walk that he was walking his dog in the evening. But it was eastern side. It was suddenly so bright. I felt like I was embraced in this a ball of light, and suddenly my body was lighter, lifted almost. Not really from the ground, but almost like the weight change had happened. And so he said, oh my goodness, maybe something had happened to me, but never thought it was his hepatitis C being healed.
Yes.
But as he was walking, you know, this is an elderly gentleman, not really like an attractive person walking with a dog. Maybe the dog is cuter than usually the owner. But more people came around to him to talk to him, not to the dog. And he was thinking, this is really strange. Why am I attracting all these people tonight? This never happened. And then the next checkup, he went to see the doctor, because hepatitis C patients have to go keep checking their virus, you know, in the blood. So the doctor said he had never seen a hepatitis C healed, especially when a person who had it for such a long time healed in one follow-up checkup. Well,
wow.
I just felt that, you know, there are a couple of things that happened. First of all, he felt that he saw the light. And then another thing is that he felt physically a lighter. Something had happened, but didn't really expect his hepatitis C to be gone. And the fact that those people around him came to him to talk to him. He had written this as a testimony, an healing account. And when I asked him, can you go to your doctor and ask him to send the data, before and after data, to the publishing society, Christian Science Publishing Society, where they publish the healing account, especially when they have this medical diagnosis, attached to the person. And so this doctor was so willing, and, what we call the Mother Church Publishing Society has the record. So what I wanted to share was this, yes, healing. Our goal is probably to have this kind of healing more often, and to really see that when Jesus walked, for example, it was probably like the a person walking into the dark room with a light of a candle. Because, yes, you're the one who has a light, but it has an effect, a ripple effect. And it's not that Jesus was carrying this light. He knew where that light was coming from. He knew where he came from. He said, I'm the Son of God. He called God actually Father instead of, in any Jewish text that we usually hear, Elohim or Jehovah or other names that in Jewish traditions that people call God. He simply called my Father, your Father, our Father. And so if we know where we come from, I think that's really the first fundamental, the basics that we need to really to see. And people who have been healed, like myself or this gentleman, have this kind of a moment of realization that they are not what they were told to be. And without actually in our brain, trying to reconstruct something, because, Scott, you recently I've been really emphasizing the difference between brain and consciousness. Brain can only know and repeat what had been fed in, fed to it, whereas consciousness is a moment of realization that knowledge or an idea that comes straight from divine mind, that we have a place that we might call consciousness, but it's really our direct connection to divine mind. So the part of that, what really makes it practical to me, is that everybody has this ability to connect with that one source of good, which we call God, but the source that only knows good about you from the very beginning, because we come from this wonderful source. We call it spirit, great spirit, or mind, or we might call soul. We have so many different names, but maybe Grady added this one word, principle. Principle. And often she puts comma and say love with capital L. The principle is actually love. Without love, we won't breathe. We won't have this planet Earth, the blue marble that we reside in, positioned in the perfect place in our galaxy, or I don't know how infinite the universe is. But science is trying to figure out where did we come from, and what's going to happen to us in the future. What if we really understand where we came from? we would know who we are now and what would be in the future, you know, about us.
Let me break away right there, Fujiko. Let me let folks have a minute to let that sink in, and we're going to break away for just a moment to thank our sponsors and remind people the station that we're listening to. We'll be right back with more to Talking with Fujiko Science.
San Francisco.
Hey, when you hear that music, you know you're listening to an episode of Spiritual Perspectives. Spiritual Perspectives, looking at real life from, well, a spiritual perspective. My name is Scout Bartlett. I'm your host, and I want to remind you quickly that all of our Spiritual Perspective shows are indeed archived up on the website in the radio archives of www.ifidknownthen.com. I do want to take a moment to thank the First Church of Christ Scientist of Mill Valley, together with a coordinating sponsorship for Spiritual Perspectives across a board of 50 churches, all of them contributing to support, produce, and bring forward this show. We appreciate it. Thank you very much. And they invite you to check out the website spirituality.com and christianscience.com. And when things are back open again, check out a Christian Science reading room or do exactly what Fujiko described. Wander in and simply sit in with a service. Meanwhile, I want to reintroduce, we're talking today with Fujiko Sine. So everybody, this is Fujiko. Fujiko, we're back with everybody.
Hello.
So we've bumped into a word along the way that's really precious and important to me, Fujiko, and every show I try to ask about it. What's your personal description of prayer? How do you go about it? How do you know when you hit the mark? How do you know when you're on it? Is it a think thing? Is it a set of words? Is it a feeling? What's your functional definition of praying and prayer?
Well, that's interesting because I wonder whether we're the only one who, you know, on this planet Earth that have this concept of prayer. We'll actually do dogs pray for us? You know? Are plants praying for us? Or are we the one who's only, you know, came up with the vocabulary? So are we the one who have this ability to pray? And, you know, what is really prayer? I think it really has to have some deep relationship with this divine, because when we say things spiritual, it's not really, of course, you know, as soon as you hit certain age that you actually have vocabulary enough to be able to pray. Even the babies, can babies be praying? And why, you know, when we think of someone, I have met someone who said she had a horrendous headache, but someone brought in a baby in the basket. And as soon as that baby, you know, she just looked at the baby, it's not like baby said anything, the headache left. And, you know, we just know that baby was not really knowing that this person had a headache. But because of that, I guess the innocence, it just wiped this something that was blocking in her own thinking, and it took the headache away. So prayer to me is actually someone knowing your perfection. And it's not, yes, we can do this individually, but who is ultimately knowing our perfection? So, so you know, it's, I don't know whether I'm explaining it clearly, but to me, what we call God or our Father is so important that Jesus, although he didn't mean to say that God was like a person, he wanted to convey this sense of love, the principle that only knows you as how love and principle made you to be. So when we say prayer, it's a reflection of that knowing that you're perfect. And so the plants, the flowers, the nature, music, they can all heal us because in all of them, there's a message. is a message that if we are open to it at that moment, if we're really hungry for it, it's almost like a dry sponge, really looking for water, the truth, we will see that. And the music can be a prayer. A plant can be a prayer. A food that somebody cooked for a person who never haven't had meal for 5 or 6 days can be healing that person. You know, a feeling like I can be a new person or a new man. And to me, that's a prayer.
That's beautiful. It's funny you mention that. There's a particular little small family-run restaurant in my area that serves Mexican food. And in my brain, because I don't think of the name of the place, I think of it as the Happy Food Restaurant, because I noticed that it's not that their food is so amazingly flavorful, but I've noticed every time I go there to eat, even now getting takeout, every time I go there to eat, after I'm done eating, I'm sort of in a cheerful and happy mood. I have to assume that the member of the family that cooks must be effectively praying over the food.
Right. Yeah, and that prayer is really desire to give something. And I think it's just we can't lose anything by wanting to give something that we have almost overflowing. I'm sure that Mexican family fits this picture where we read in the 23rd Psalm, my cup runneth over. Their cup runneth over, and they're sharing that running over part. They keep the whole cup full constantly. And we get to be beneficiary of the flowing part. And we all want to be like that. I think that's what we really strive to be. Keep our cup full enough and then overflowing, that when we walk, we can actually reach out and give that little bit that we have extra. And, you know, it's not really about, we're not becoming like a certain way of ideology or when we have love, it's natural to share. It's natural to give up something that may even be so precious to you, because you want another person to also experience that good. And to me, all of that is a prayer.
So if you set aside a moment to pray, Fujiko, what's your process? Mm-hmm. Not that everyone should follow your process. I'm just exploring.
Well, most of the time I really want to put that person right inside, what I would call my other Mother God. I don't keep that person as a kind of a target. You know, the center is always God. So I want to put that person right in the middle of it. If there's any picture, you know, we can imagine that there's this beautiful a sphere that's full of light, and that's where you want to put that person. Because most of the time when I receive a call, it's not always cheerful. It's because they have problems. They have challenges, and they have something that they really feel that they're stuck with. And so what I can do, and also that really helps me not to go into this so-called pit with that person, is to really see like, okay, there's this atmosphere or sphere of this completely, this light full of love that can absorb everything that we would feel is negative and turning into this, into love and joy.
Perfect. It's funny, it makes me think there's a quote from Marianne Williamson, and one line in the quote is simply, as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously mm-hmm. give other people permission to do the same.
Mm. Yes. Yes, so I think Like, it is really the ripple effect that, sometimes I've been asked after a lecture, Q&A, how do you maintain your joy? You know, it's really essential that we ourselves take a stand and not let go of that joy like a child. And sometimes all I have to ask a patient to do is to have that child-like openness and let go. You know, literally let go. And I even had sometimes ask them to lie on the floor and not have any part of the muscles to try to lift anything, to be like a rag doll. Lie down there. And I ask that person to, you know, if they have a little child, come and lift their arm. And if you're helping, you have to stop helping yourself. You just let that child pick up your arm or your head or the legs. Or it's not easy for a child to do this, but it's more difficult for an adult to let go of that strength. And people say, like, well, isn't it we should be in charge? And I said, no, we shouldn't be in charge, because when we are in charge, we are only using the limited strength. Limited intelligence. If we let go, we're letting in that higher intelligence and ideas and strength to support us. And that's why children are joyful, because they don't have a burden, or they don't have a sense of attention that they feel like I have to succeed. Attention like that only cause more tension, So sometimes I say practical because the way I see it is, if I'm listening to Divine Mind and if something comes to me, like to do that kind of exercise with a child, it's not like I ask every adult to do this. Each individual is different. And each individual, as we are both listening to Divine Mind, I'm not giving them an advice, but sometimes a thought comes to me to ask them a question, and that opens up this thing that needs to be released. But I'm not a psychologist. You know, we don't go back to childhood to ask what went wrong with them. And I know sometimes they don't want to talk about it, but if we're trusting that the intelligence, Divine Mind, a Father, Mother, God knows everything that we need to know, and only surface itself to be destroyed. And so it's such a relief, because we don't ourselves carry that burden of the past, but I don't see other people coming with the burden of the past, because children don't see you that way. And we want to really follow Jesus' instruction when he said, you know, when the disciples were arguing who was going to be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven, he said, unless you're converted to become like these little children, you will not enter into the kingdom of heaven. And, you know, we use the word convert usually to convert from one faith to another. But he's saying just to become like a child. And you may have heard me say this before, but convert in this case means to return to its original form. As your convertible, the car that you take roof off, you always put it back to its original form. It's to return to where you came from. Return to your original, to origin. So I think in that way, Christian Science is practical, because the scriptures that I used to know or read, or even experiences that I had as a market research consultant for semiconductor industry, things that they have said came back to me as I was studying, I began to study Christian Science to make sense. For example, one of the engineers of semiconductor industry said, Fujiko, the more we understand the principles, we need less matter. Because at that point in 90s, 80 to 90s, we're trying to make, our cell phone smaller, lighter, more powerful, but thin. And their goal was to make it smaller as they understood how things work. And so Christian Science is like how things work, and eventually we need less matter in medicine, in energy, even to bring peace. The largest, to me, the largest mass of matter that we use for is, can you guess, Scott?
No, I have no idea where we're going.
Weapons.
Ah, yes, true.
Can you imagine? We can bring peace. We had a person called a King of Peace, a Prince of Peace, came to teach us how we could probably live without building so much stuff around us, whether it's to protect us. We don't really live in the castle with the mort and the walls anymore. We must be doing something better than what we used to, when we had the fiefdom and, fighting like in Japanese history. We had this war period. All the lords are fighting. They had to build massive castles. But that's actually very labor-intensive, and it's just to protect a few people. Those people who built and gave their so-called tax by giving, they used to pay tax with rice. They themselves live a very meager, malnourished life when they have to support someone like the Lord. So to me, the more we understand the principles, we need less matter. We will have more peace. We have more joy. We have more health. So it makes sense that Mary Baker Eddy named her textbook Science and Health. 1875. The title is so appropriate to, even now, these two words, everybody's looking for science, which is what is truth, and health, is what is peace.
Which brought me back to another phrase you'd used earlier. You mentioned in the process of healing that there's a place where I think you were referring to the gentleman with the hepatitis C, but a realization that we're not a material body with a problem inside. Where do we go? Where do we take our thoughts to if we're not a material body? Because it seems like that the real world is the material stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's fun. I ask you a six-hour question, and we've got 6 minutes left.
you need Lawrence Doyle to talk about this. What is matter, anyway?
Ah.
Because it really comes down to, even in science, is it the touch, the feel that we depending on to assess reality? Are five sense testimonies really reliable? I think that's where it comes to, especially when you see healing takes place. And it's not just in Christian Science. Healing is taking place in all different places, too. You probably read the book Dying to, what was it?
Oh, yeah, I know that. That's Anita Morjani's book, Dying to Be Me.
Oh, yes. She had a near-death experience, and when she came back, all her cancer symptoms started to disappear. And so the doctors have to really grapple with this idea. What was that matter that was, deteriorating? What is reconstructing and rebuilding this back? There's so many examples of it. And one of the doctors recently asked other doctors to send in the weirdest experiences that they had, in their practice. And all of them had these kind of witnessing these kind of healings. So So they have to really think about what is matter? What is health? How do we regain a heart that was supposed to be deteriorating to, within a month or two, reconstruct it to be a healthy one without procedure or medicine? So I think we should really doubt first. Are we just material substance? And when we start looking into the microscope, the smaller it gets, it just seems like matter does not really make sense the way we understand to be solid. You know, that we can actually touch and feel it solid. But that's not really what the substance is of, you know, even physics talks about this. But I think it's important to really see that when we want to know where we came from, we have to start with spirit. We can't be starting with somehow an egg or a dust, because then you say, where did that dust come from?
Right, right.
Or where did that egg come from, the egg and chicken thing? But so my take on man is made in the image and likeness when God or divine mind or consciousness knows this idea called man, it appears in infinite expression, infinite ways, manifestation. And throughout the year. So the baby who is born today is only the manifestation of that man that God created. So the same with flowers. We're just starting to see some cherry blossoms in Tokyo. Flower is the concept that's being created, but it appears in a multifarious, infinite ways that we, you know, none of the flowers are the same. Even, you know, I can't check all the flowers, but one tree of a cherry tree can have so many blossoms. And they say none of them exactly the same, maybe similar. So that means, points to us that, okay, the creator must be infinite. But the very first line in the preface of this textbook says, to those leaning on the sustaining infinite, today is big with blessing. So the sustaining
infinite. I'm sorry, Fujiko, could you repeat that again, please?
To those leaning on the sustaining infinite, today is big with blessing. So this sentence starts with two. You know, when I'm writing a letter to you, I would just put on the envelope to someone, or, you know. This is actually directional to those. Really saying that it's really about you. Everyone who opens this book, to those leaning on the sustaining infinite. And she doesn't even capitalize infinite. She knows that the sustaining infinite is one God. But that's where we want to lean on. And she glimpsed this from her own healing when everything material became more spiritual. She realized that her reality had shifted to all material, to all spiritual. I like the word epiphany because the definition is a sudden intuitive realization, an intuitive realization into reality, a sudden intuitive realization of, insight into the reality. That's epiphany. That's what happened to Mr. Takemura, who was healed of hepatitis C. He had a sudden intuitive realization of insight into the reality. Although we don't use the word, that's actually what happened. The reality shift takes place. And the more we understand this, the more the health we have, more protection that we have, and also more peace we have. We have so much to heal, not just physical body, but I think, you know, poverty, the hatred, or anything that's socially, we cannot live with this whole idea that some are blessed and others are not blessed. To me, that's actually the first thing we need to heal.
That is so sweet. Thank you so much. I always end up wishing that we had 5 hours to chat, Fujiko. For those of you listening, this has been Spiritual Perspectives, and we've been talking today with Fujiko Signs, S-I-G-N-S, just like street signs. You can look her up. You can find more of her work up online. We appreciate it. We give thanks again to the First Church of Christ Science in Mill Valley and the coordinating sponsorship that has sponsored Spiritual Perspectives. This is Scout Bartlett asking every one of you to do me 2 favors. One, treat yourself as a loved one, because you truly are. And then take a moment to notice that no matter where on earth you are, it's a perfect day to have a great day on purpose.